You're listening to episode 16 of Fear the Boots interview series. In this episode, we talk with Chris Kluwe of the Minnesota Vikings. Running time for this episode is 58 minutes.
Hello and welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Pat.
My name's Chad.
This is Wayne.
This is Chris.
And those of you who have already noticed, the show started off a little strangely in the fact that Dan is not here.
I wouldn't say strange. I would say refreshing.
Okay. Anyway, so Dan is actually not feeling well this evening. He's a little under the weather. And furthermore, he actually got called up back into work. So he had a double whammy.
Yeah.
So he will not be with us.
And working.
He will not be with us tonight. And in a strange bit of feverish dementia, he decided to put me in charge of moderating this episode. So good luck to us all. Also with us on the mics this evening is Chris Kluwe of the Minnesota Vikings.
Hey guys, how's it going?
Pretty good.
Good.
Very well.
The way we do this is I'd like to take just a little bit of time here for Chris to sort of introduce himself and tell us a little bit about what you're known for in the sports world.
I'm the punter for the Minnesota Vikings, but I'm probably more well known as the guy who plays Guitar Hero for the Minnesota Vikings.
Nice.
And then I'm a huge video gamer. I've been playing games since I was about 4 years old, I think, with the original Nintendo Entertainment System. And pretty much if it's a video game, I will play it, unless it's a sports game. I'm terrible at those. And then I'm also big into tabletop miniature gaming, War Machine being the latest of that. And then tried to play D&D, but it's tough to find a good gaming group when you're in different parts of the country. So still working on that.
So I have to ask, how were you first exposed to Guitar Hero?
Actually, I read about it on Penny Arcade. I was like, huh, that seems pretty cool. And I just finished playing Frequency and Amplitude by Harmonix. I was like, hey, this is a pretty cool company. So ordered Guitar Hero. It arrived at my house. This is like my first year with the Vikings too, so I didn't really have anything else to do. And I started playing it. And I was like, wow, this game's a lot of fun. And then I just kept getting better and better at it. I was like, wow, this game is still a lot of fun. And then Activision kind of ran it into the ground. So
yeah, I think You're the first person I've talked to that actually didn't get hooked on it by walking through a Best Buy. that was how I got hooked. I walked by, I saw the guitar on there. It's like, I've got to try this. And after I butcher the first song, it's like, I've got to own this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, I've always been a big fan of rhythm and music games. Like, I played Beatmania and stuff in the arcades, which is kind of the natural precursor. And I think actually Konami had the idea first with Guitar Freaks, but never brought it over. Yeah. But when I saw the game concept coming out by Harmonix, I was like, this looks amazing. I'm going to pick up this game no matter what. And thankfully, it turned out to be pretty good.
Now, are you exclusively Guitar Hero, or have you dabbled into the Rock Band arena then as well?
I played both. I like both. I think they're a little different. Guitar Hero is a little easier on the guitar. It's a little more forgiving because they want you to play like the really fast, super hard solo sections. And I think they overchart some of their notes just to make it seem a little cooler. But, you know, that's a lot of fun. And then Rock Band is all about the band. And then I really like Rock Band for the drums because the drums are incredibly hard to play.
Yeah, they are tough to play. Actually, my son, when he plays it, he ends up sweating profusely. And he usually ends up playing the drums in his boxers by the time he's been into it for about half an hour.
Yeah, I'm sure he loves you sharing that.
Wow.
That's the thing. We come home and you come around the corner, you can hear him just hammering away on the drum set, you know, and you turn and look, oh yeah, there he is, just sitting away, you know, slamming the bass pedal, and he's got his red and white boxers on.
I usually have to take my shirt off after a couple songs if I'm playing the drums, because it's hard work. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, but I actually finally tried drums on Rock Band just the other day, and I did it on easy. It was even still a challenge for me, but then, you know, like I've always said to people when it comes to video games, I was raised on a button and a stick, you know, with the 2600, so doing anything beyond that has always been a challenge, though, for me, so.
It's weird, like, the drums are the one instrument there. Of course, with Rock Band 3 and the fact you can plug in real instruments is no longer really applies, but the drums were kind of like the only plastic instrument where it's actually like playing the real thing. I mean, if you can keep a beat on the drums, you could probably do it on the real drums too.
I've read reviews and such where it says that if you can do drums on hard, then you should seriously consider taking drum lessons.
Well, I got up to expert, so.
Or but, expert, yeah. Yeah.
I decided to go with the guitar instead.
Yeah, you play bass guitar in a band, don't you?
Yeah. We're called Tripping Icarus. We're actually working on our third CD, despite not having released our second CD yet, because we're lazy. We run into some issues, but hopefully it should be out soon. But cool. I started playing the bass guitar because I mastered Guitar Hero, and I was like, I should probably learn how to play the real thing at some point.
Next level.
Yeah, exactly.
So how was that whenever you actually got the bass guitar? Was it pretty easy to pick up after that point, after you played Guitar Hero? Or was it still pretty hard or what?
Well, I started with the normal guitar because I wanted to learn how to play the six-string guitar. And that one was pretty difficult for me because I couldn't quite get the hang of moving my fingers horizontally and vertically at the same time, like the chord positions and everything. And I'd played violin for about 7 years growing up, so I had a musical background. And then I tried the bass one day, and I was like, wow, this feels really natural, because it was very similar to the violin in that it's got four strings. You're generally only playing on one string at a time. And it just felt like a much more comfortable fit. So I switched over to the bass during my lessons and started learning pretty quickly. It just kind of felt more natural to me.
That's cool. So yeah, you're like a triple or quadruple threat there. You've got a lot of talents going on there. That's awesome.
Yeah, I've always been pretty blessed to have a lot of both athletic and mental gifts. Like almost everything I do, I can pick up pretty easily. The two sole exceptions have been physics and singing. So I don't know.
Those are the two things that I can do.
See, there you go. You so got together, me on those ones.
Yeah, together we make quite a formidable duo, I guess. Exactly.
That's, you two are you're almost a
superhero team.
You two are almost a whole Renaissance man.
That's true.
You're the Robin to my Batman.
There you go. Now, you said that you are the Guitar Hero player of the Minnesota Vikings. Do any of your fellow teammates play or play with you or compete with you in that regard?
Or do they just tease you up?
Or no?
A couple of years ago, they did. It was actually pretty popular in the locker room because I had it set up in the players' lounge. And guys would have like 15 or 20 minutes to kill in between meetings. So they'd just come in and either play Guitar Hero or Rock Band. We had both set up. And no one ever really got to the point where they wanted to challenge me because obviously, since I don't have meetings during the day, I spent the whole day playing it. So I got a lot better than the other guys. But it was fun because, you know, we'd be playing four people at a time on Rock Band and things like that. And the coaches would come in and look and just kind of shake their heads and walk out. So it was pretty entertaining.
Now, you talked a little bit about playing a lot of online games versus the tabletop because you're doing a lot of traveling. Has online gaming, as far as like MMOs and WoW, has that always been like your first love? Or is that something that you just come to love because of the circumstances of your job?
I've always been a fan of pretty much video games in general. I got into online gaming with Ultima Online, which was, I think, the first graphical based online. Like it wasn't a MUD or anything like that. And I remember one of my friends had it and we went over to his house and we were playing it. We're like, this is amazing. Like we're running around and there's these other people running around. And you know,
that's
we're in high
a
school.
Real person.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like yeah. He's not running like a computer. That's crazy. So got into Ultima, then got into EverQuest. And then after that, it was pretty much everything that came out. I'd try for at least a month. Played Dark Ages of Camelot for quite a bit. And then Asheron's Call 1 and 2, played both of those. Almost every online game that's come out, I've given a shot, except for the huge amount of releases we've had lately. But
yeah,
no, I'll still try and pick up the big ones when they come out.
What's your current favorite then?
I don't know that I really have one. I got back into WoW for a little bit when Cataclysm was released, got to the level cap, did the in-game raiding and stuff. I'm in a pretty hardcore in-game raiding guild. I went through the dungeons and it was basically, if you can avoid standing in fire, you get loot. And there's only so many different ways you can avoid standing in fire. So got kind of bored with that. Checked out Rift, got to the max level cap, did some in-game dungeons, avoided standing in fire, got loot. So got kind of bored of that. So right now it's I'm pretty much just hanging around. I'm actually really, really curious to see. There's a game coming out called Firefall. It's a first-person shooter persistent game. And one of my brother's friends actually works on it, so I've been able to do some of the beta testing for it and stuff, and that's it looks pretty cool. So I'm excited to see what they're going to do with that one.
I absolutely hear you, though, in the don't stand in the fire. We call it in our guild, it's like, don't stand in the bad. You know,
yeah,
it gets to be the same thing over and over again. I honestly think that in the MMO world, not just in WoW, but in all WoW-like MMOs right now, it's all the same thing. And
yeah,
I'm ready for the next paradigm. You know, I'm ready for the paradigm shift in a massive game, and I'm just not seeing it out there.
Yeah, because, I mean, there's only so many different ways you can color fire and, you know, say don't stand in this, or, and you got the flip side, you've got the good fire, stand in this and get a buff. And it's like, yeah. I mean, yeah. They got to do something else. Personally, what I would like to see is a game that takes where if you have a dungeon, you know, someone is in charge of the dungeon, like more adversarial dungeons. I think that would be pretty cool.
Sort of a dungeon keeper. They have a limited amount of resources to throw at you.
Right, exactly. And then their rewards are based on how many times they can make you die before you beat the dungeon. And then your rewards are based on how many deaths you don't have when you do clear it. I think that could be pretty cool.
In fact, I don't know. I'm almost to the point where I'm kind of done with the get a quest, kill 10 wolves, come back, turn in the quest. And I'm just kind of done with that sort of setup. There's nothing wrong with it. It's pretty fun. But it's just been done over and over and over again in WoW. And I think WoW does it best, but it's time for a totally different paradigm. Like EVE. EVE Online, absolutely different paradigm, totally different way of doing this sort of massive multiplayer game. Absolutely beautiful game. Totally not for me. It's Excel spreadsheets, the game, and it's kind of beyond me.
Yeah, I was going to say, if EVE didn't have a learning curve that was steeper than Mount Everest, then they'd probably get some more people playing it.
Totally.
But yeah, I love reading the stories about it where someone sets up like a 2-year plot to just bring down a mega corporation and then just destroy someone's life.
Never have I read a story about somebody setting up a Ponzi scheme and I'm cheering for the guy.
Yeah, exactly.
Everything I hear about it reminds me of the old BBS games I used to play. It seems like this big, giant equivalent of Trade Wars, but it just... different and
only
longer,
more
and
more. Yeah,
one thing actually I would like to see make a comeback in MMOs is the skill point based system of Ultima Online, because I really like that, and that the more you did something, the better you got at it. Like, there weren't really levels. It was just the, you know, what you naturally did, that's what you became good at.
And see, that makes a lot more sense to me than I put on a cloak and now I am stronger. Or I put on a hat, now I am more intelligent. Or I've killed enough wolves, and now I am better at killing everything.
Yeah, and I've said it before, I get invested in my characters if I chose what the character looks like. Most MMOs for me, because of all the gear dropping and the just piece together something that doesn't look stupid, it really kills my immersion in the game. That's why I was such a big fan of City of Heroes for so long, and other games like that where you create your character and you keep that appearance. I need that to get more invested.
I think in my ideal MMO, the crafting system would have something to do with that, in that there wouldn't be a huge difference between like epic drops and what you can craft, like maybe a percentage point of damage difference or something like that. But you could customize the way it looked, so that way, you know, you could make it your own character.
Yeah, that's the big thing. If in a crafting system you could choose the appearances, that would answer all of my complaints. I mean, I would just be making the same thing over and over again with different stats.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then, and I think you could probably do something like that, in that maybe you unlock templates as you get more along in the crafting system, or give people like a little bit of leeway, like give them a grid-based system that you can, you know, kind of design where the spikes are coming out or something like that.
Chris, when you have played, you know, in your MMOs, do you find yourself actually, you know, in a certain sense role-playing with that character, or investing some sort of an intangible attribute to that character where maybe you won't do certain things or go certain places, or do you just play because you can play? And then that's about where it ends for you. I mean, how much character do you put into your avatar that you make?
In most cases, I'll try and make them as much a reflection of myself as I can. Like, the reason I picked a troll in WoW was because it was the tallest race in the game. Pretty tall. So I was like, hey, you know, I'm going to pick this guy. But yeah, generally, most cases, I try to stay pretty true to how I would behave, I think, in most cases. Like, I won't get wildly out of character. Although there is something to be said for just pushing your boundaries and doing stuff you normally never would do just to experience that. But yeah, in most cases, I'm me in the game.
Going back then, I mean, a little bit further, because you said that you had tried some tabletop RPGs, because I think you said you played D&D and you'd even played some Shadowrun before. Was that a similar experience? Did you play it enough to even really start to, you know, get into the role-playing aspect? Or what did you enjoy about the tabletops when you played them?
I like the role-playing part, but I think at heart I'm a power gamer, so I always like looking for those.
You're honest about it.
Yeah, like I love looking for those ridiculously overpowered combos where, you know, once you hit like level 12 or 13, you're just unstoppable. And then it becomes, you know, okay, I just got to get to this point. But for me, 90% of the fun in designing a class is just looking down that skill tree and trying to see where the designers put those combinations in.
I think that's a fairly popular take on games oftentimes, because I know I'm actually guilty of that too. I don't know if I should say guilty or not, but that's, I do the same thing. And I really noticed that came about when the D20 system came out with feats and stuff that you can put together. That for me was when I really started noticing, okay, I'm going to play this character, but what I have to do is I have to look and see where I want to be at like level 10 or 15 or 20. And then basically work backwards to where I am now, because I have to take this power and then I have to take this one, you know, and then I have to have this one over here so that I don't get stuck down a road, you know, when I'm working up to that way. So yeah, I'm guilty of that way of play too, which is interesting because I know that some of the guys around the table or on the mics do not do it that way. In fact, I know they kind of don't like to level up as high, but for me, I always love getting to the higher levels and getting more powers.
For me, I'm the complete opposite. It's like I don't really even need or even want a character sheet with stats and numbers. It's not that I think that that's an invalid way of playing, because, hell, I play WoW, and that's all that is numbers and stats and crunching stuff. But to me, like, if you're sitting down at a table and playing a role-playing game, for me, it's about the story and interacting with the story. And I just don't feel I need all of that other stuff to tweak whatever it is that I'm tweaking about, you know, in the game, to wherever I'm getting out of this game.
Yeah, getting back to your point, I think when I do play D&D and stuff like that, though, I do like to look for those combinations, but at the same time, I also want to make sure, you know, that everyone's having fun. Like, it's totally not power gaming for the sake of power gaming, but mm-hmm. also in that I want to tell a cool story with these abilities. And then right. I'd also really like to try a game one point where, you know, just make a bad character and, you know, try and see how far you can take it.
Yeah.
Like a tragically flawed hero.
I have to say, that's something I like to do in MMOs. I've never intentionally made a bad or difficult to make character on a tabletop game. I definitely don't go for the most effective characters. But on MMOs, if I've been playing for a while, City of Heroes, I played for 5 years. I like to pick the classes that they say can't solo just to prove people wrong. And I pick all the powers that people say, these are the powers that you should never take. And I find ways to make them work as a personal challenge. And I have fun doing that.
Actually, I did that in, I think it was Dark Age of Camelot. I made a warrior, and he was a tank with a shield and a dagger. It actually turned out to be surprisingly effective.
Nice.
So you just have to get in really close.
So you were mentioning that you played D&D. What is your tabletop face-to-face role-playing game resume?
Probably just D&D and Shadowrun, I would say. I mean, unless you count in like strategy games like Warhammer and War Machine. The thing is that athletics tends to take up a lot of time. Yeah. And especially in like high school and college and stuff like that, like I didn't really have a lot of free time like after school. And so my friends, I'd try and get to play, and then, you know, they'd be interested in it for like a session or two, and then they'd get bored and wander off. And so I could never really find a good gaming group, which kind of sucked.
I guess that's one of the fundamental differences between like a tabletop role-playing game and something like World of Warcraft. They're fundamentally the same thing. They can be the same kind of game, but you flip on WoW, there's always something to do, and there's always at least someone on, even if they're not a friend of yours, there's always someone on you can do something with.
Yeah, even if you're in the most like godforsaken backwater server there's at least, you know, 400 or 500 people on whenever you log on. So yeah, you can always find something to do.
Yeah. But on a tabletop role-playing game, I mean, personally, I think that's why they're not more popular, at least here in the States, is that Americans are always go, go, go. We have filled out schedules. We're always doing something, even if we're just hanging out and not doing anything. We're always doing something. And a tabletop role-playing game, I mean, it takes a lot of time to schedule.
You have to make
that.
A social appointment to do it.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Logistically, like it's a challenge. I mean, you're trying to get 4 to 7 people in the same spot for like 4 or 5 hours at a time. And if anyone has families, then that's definitely going to make it harder than you think.
When you say that they would stick around for 3 or 4 sessions and then wander off, which actually created kind of a humorous visual imagery, I can see, you know, you all sitting on the table and then, you know, 3/4 just kind of gets up and just starts walking away. Was this something that you were you running things, or were you a player? Did it just die from boredom, or did things in gel? I mean, what caused it to end the way it did?
Kind of a mix of all three. Like, I tried DMing, I tried being as a player and having one of my other friends DM, and people would just lose interest too quickly. We'd never really get anywhere into a campaign, and then we'd always find something else to do. Like, I think GoldenEye was out around that time, so we're like, let's go play GoldenEye. So, I mean, and we'd usually try it at my house, and I had a pool also, so guys, we get bored, and we just go jump in the pool. So, I mean, it was more short attention spans than anything else.
So, Chris, you had mentioned that, especially in high school and college, that, you know, the sports took up a lot of your time, so you didn't have a lot of free time for gaming. Is that pretty much the same now in the professional world, or do you have any more or less time for this kind of activity now?
Actually, it's funny. Now that I am a professional athlete, I have much more free time than I ever did growing up, because the thing is that kicking, you can only kick so much per day, which usually ends up being about 40 to 45 minutes. And then, you know, you can like lift weights or something for another hour or so, but that still leaves, you know, 22 hours in the day to pretty much do whatever. Granted, I spend a lot of that time with my family and stuff, but I mean, especially during the off season, I have a ton of free time that I need to find some way to occupy. And luckily for me, I enjoy playing video games. So
cool. Yeah.
It's a perfect fit.
It sounds like to me, from what you're describing from your youth and whatnot, you know, one of the terms we kind of coined here is that of gamer shame, where a lot of people, if they are gamers, they don't necessarily admit it publicly. That with at least with tabletops, not so much at all with video games, even for MMOs, there's still that stigma, you know, that you're, you know, in your parents' basement and you're eating Cheetos and drinking Mountain Dew and you're just a social misfit. Some people have it, some people don't. Most of us, obviously, here on the mics, we don't, you know, we haven't really had too much of a problem with it, but it doesn't sound like you really had that much of a problem either, which I kind of find interesting for someone being in that, you know, athletic world, especially in high school and college, where cliques are still pretty prevalent.
Yeah, you could pretty much consider me the quintessential nerd. Like, I play athletics because it's something I'm good at, and it's something my parents brought me up doing as I grew up. But my first love has always been more for nerdish activities. Like, I love reading books, I love playing video games, tabletop stuff, you know, things like that. And it's funny because at football games, before games, you know, when guys are getting ready, they're like listening to music or whatever. Like, I'd just be reading a book in my locker or reading a book on the team bus on the way there. And my high school coach says now, and looking back, he's probably right, that if I had found a way to sneak a book onto the sideline, I probably would have been reading during the game as well. So, I've never really had a problem with gamer shame or anything like that, because that's always just been part of my life. And for me, football is a job, but doing the stuff I enjoy, that's what I really like doing.
That's where you get a lot of your satisfaction, your pleasure satisfaction comes from the games.
Yeah, and I mean, and don't get me wrong, you know, I do enjoy playing football. Like, I like doing my job and I like doing it well, but at the same time, if I was to never play football again, then I could happily find another job doing something else, probably in either the video game industry or writing industry or something like that.
I mean, you didn't really suffer then any kind of, I even hate using the word mistreatment, but I mean, nobody really came down on you because they knew that you were doing tabletops or doing, you know, miniature wargaming?
You know, I got teased about it and stuff like that, but nothing really more than that, because I was usually the biggest kid in my class until I got to college. It's tough to pick on the kid who outweighs you and can probably kick you through the door. So most people generally left it alone at that, you know. Yeah. Maybe some barbed insults, but you know, it's just something I figured it kind of came with the territory and never really bugged me.
That's cool. That actually kind of worked the same thing for me too, because I'm a bigger guy, I always have been. But I was in the music curriculum in high school and college. I'm a singer, and so I was in all that kind of stuff too, so I was in some pretty geeky stuff, and I never really had any problem with that, generally speaking, because, you know, I'm a big enough guy that they're like, yeah, maybe we won't pick on him because he might sit on me.
I actually had the complete opposite problem as a kid. I was always the biggest one in my class. I'm 6'3". Well, I wasn't 6'3" in elementary school, but I was relatively bigger than everybody else in my class. I always looked like I'd been held behind for a year, but I was really a timid kid. And so the bullies targeted me and picked on me and beat me up all the time. Until one day I just absolutely snapped, saw red, grabbed one, and pounded one into the pavement.
I think I saw that on YouTube two or 3 months ago.
I just saw that. It was a body slam.
That was Chad, yeah. Australian Chad.
Yeah. And let me tell you, they don't pick on you after you do that. You
only that's amazing how true. Well that works, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I had actually one instance similar to that when I was growing up. I was just easygoing and mild-mannered, but this one kid just kept pushing my buttons and just picking and picking and picking, and I finally stood up to him, and I didn't even hit him or anything. I just sort of stood up to him, and I sort of pushed him back from me a little bit.
Yeah.
I said, stop, and that was it. He had this look. I mean, you would have thought that I was coming at him with with a club or something. You can see this look of terror in the kid's eyes. Never bothered me again.
As much as I don't want to condone violence in schools, you know, some people just need a good beating. And then they get it out of their system.
That was always how it worked in high school for us, is the guys who hated each other, as soon as they got their fight out, then they were like best friends. It never failed. They'd hate each other, they'd harass each other, and then they'd beat the crap out of each other, and then they were like buds after that, you know.
I had that exact same thing happen. There was this one guy, and I guess there were two times when I snapped as a kid. There was this one guy, and he would pick on me and pick on me and pick on me constantly, incessantly. And one day we were standing next to each other, and it was elementary school, and I was writing something down. I had a pencil in my hand. I was writing something down, and he kept picking on me, pushing me, you know, doing all the little kid bully stuff, and I look up and I punch him in the face. Unfortunately, I'm holding a pencil in my hand when I did it, and I broke the tip of the pencil off in his nose.
Oh man.
And to this day, that man has a black spot where I tattooed his face.
Wow.
Right by his nose with a pencil. Well, years later, you know, they kind of separated us and whatnot. And years later, we're going to the same high school. We're sitting in study hall together, and we just kind of get to talking, and it's like, hey, I know you. You're that guy I used to pick on. And I'm like, you still got that black mark on your nose. And then, yeah, we laughed about it and stuff. And yeah, I can't say we became really good friends. But yeah, it was always like, hey, how you doing, man? And in the halls and stuff. So yeah, totally.
Because of the unique circumstance of your job, I'm imagining that obviously during the regular season, you pretty much don't have any time at all to invest with gaming. I mean, except for maybe the bye week, I'm assuming.
You'd be surprised.
Well, like, I guess maybe because of your position, I suppose you might have a little bit more time.
Yeah. I'd say the normal guys, they don't really have a lot of time because a lot of the day is spent with meetings, like going over playbooks, reviewing game films, stuff like that. But as a punter, there's not really any game film to watch or things to meet over, since there's only so many ways you can kick a football. So pretty much I get to the facility at around like 7:15 in the morning, and until about 1 o'clock when we practice, I have nothing to do. They have wireless in the player's lounge, so I'll usually either bring my laptop or they have a PS3 and 360 setup. So I mean, I get a lot of time at the facility, and then once I'm done, come home, hang out with my family, and then once the kids are in bed, then you know, there's another couple hours at night. So it's actually a lot more time than people think.
You have the greatest job on the face of the planet.
I was gonna say, it's gamer heaven. That's pretty phenomenal.
So I'm kind of curious how you ended up in that particular position. Was it something you went for, or did it just kind of fall into your lap?
Kind of fell into my lap. I played soccer and baseball growing up, and I'd always been a pretty good athlete. And then going into high school, I needed a fall sport. So I was like, hey, I can kick a soccer ball. You know, I'm going to see if I can kick a football. Won the starting kicking job for the freshman team, and I started taking some kicking lessons. And the guys who taught me, they had played in the NFL, and they're like, if you work on this, you're good enough to definitely make it to college, and you probably have a chance to make it professionally. And so I was like, well, that sounds like the easiest job I can imagine. I'm going to do that.
Nice.
So put in quite a lot of practice and got a scholarship to UCLA, and then was a undrafted free agent coming out of college. Got picked up by the Seahawks in preseason. And then they were going to put me on practice squad, and the Vikings claimed me off waivers because we had played the Vikings the week before as our last preseason game. And their punter at the time, Darren Bennett, he wasn't punting very well. So they pretty much gave me a 1 week tryout and punted well enough to keep the job, and have been doing so ever since.
Nice.
Do you find, as you do go around and do a lot of traveling and interact with our players within the NFL, are there, this will sound odd, but are there more like you in the sense of...
Are there others
who are other gamers? I mean, obviously there's plenty of people who I'm sure do play regular video games. But I mean, I'm talking about like the MMOs or even, and if this is so, we got to hear about it, but even if it's tabletop stuff.
I haven't met anyone who's been into tabletop stuff. I met a couple guys that were into MMOs. Two were into WoW. One was into Final Fantasy XI of all games.
Wow.
I mean, you want to talk about a grind fest, but
yeah.
I was like, more power to you, because that game, I could not play that game. But the thing is, a lot of guys are really big into kind of like action games and sports games. Like, they'll play God of War and Call of Duty and stuff like that, because a lot of these guys, you know, they're fresh out of college. They've got a lot of discretionary income, and they have a lot of free time, you know, when they're not playing football. And so they're used to playing games. So, I mean, I'd say it's a pretty large percentage of the NFL that, you know, has at least a passing familiarity with video games.
So out of curiosity, have you ever used your position as a way to meet famous people that you'd love to meet? Any geek idols you would want to meet that you've had a chance to?
I did get a chance to tour the Blizzard Studios, which was pretty cool.
Nice.
That was a lot of fun. And then I actually got to meet the head of Neversoft when they were making Guitar Hero, because I got to know a couple guys at Activision pretty well in their, I think it was in their sales or marketing department, since they were based in Eden Prairie, which is like 20 minutes away from where we practice at. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's a lot of fun to meet people where I'm like, I know what you do. You're a video game designer. And they're like, I know what you do. You're a punter. It's funny, just the kind of like mutual respect and admiration.
You mentioned a little bit earlier that something that you might find interesting doing would be, say, working in the video game industry. Do you have any thoughts of doing that, say, down the road? You won't be a punter forever. Do you have any thoughts of that possibly? Or is that just maybe that would be a fun thing? Or
what I would want to do is I've been kind of designing my ideal MMO in my head over the past probably like 10 or 11 years, and constantly just refining it and tweaking it and stuff like that. And I think I would like to pitch the idea to like a company or something like that, because I know I don't have the technical expertise to get it done, but I think ideal wise, I think it could work. And then it would be, you know, more sort of a producer type role instead of like an actual like programming type role, something like that. Because I did take a couple computer science classes in high school and college. But like I said, since physics was one of the things I wasn't very good at, I couldn't go on to the computer science major since I had to finish the physics class. But, you know, just something like that would be cool. I've also talked with a couple of my brother's friends. They're interested in opening up like a tabletop gaming / comic book type store kind of in the Southern California area, because there's not a whole lot of those here. And we think that, you know, one could do well here. So that would be cool too, you know, just go in and be the quirky shop owner who just kind of hangs out all day talking board games and stuff.
Have you had the chance to visit, oh, what the hell's her name? They just totally escaped me. The big board game producer based out of Roseville, Minnesota. They make Descent.
I know who you're talking about. No, I haven't had a chance to see them. Actually, it's funny. Me and a friend are designing a board / card game as well in our free time. He's the executive editor of Game Informer, so he knows quite a bit about video games as well.
Nice.
And so we're coming up with this board / card game, and we're slowly getting there, but it's more a work in progress.
Can you tell us anything about it? Are you planning on doing anything serious with it, or is it just more of a hobby right now?
Hobby, we'd like to make it serious. I'm pretty much in charge of coming up with like the rules and the monsters and stats and stuff like that. And we're almost at the playtest stage, but since I'm kind of lazy, like we've kind of stalled out a little bit. But one of these days I'll just sit down and bang it out, and then we'll actually have a playtestable beta. But kind of the idea is that you're you know, group of heroes kind of working together. There's this mist, right? These evil creatures, the Grendel, live in. Mm-hmm. And basically each member of the party's been marked with this tattoo. It's this mark of the Grendel, which would be the game name. It gives you this ability to use magical powers, but it comes at this cost. You know, the more you use them, the more likely you are to go insane and attack your party members, sort of Call of Cthulhu-esque. It'd be kind of a mix of Arkham Horror and a TCG type game, where you could actually unlock more enemies and equipment and stuff like that, and you'd gear up as you went through. We'd like to get it to the playtest stage where you can see if this stuff is working or not, but I think it could work.
So this is a board game CCG type thing you're making?
Yeah, so you'd play on a board, it would have like a map location, stuff like that, and then your characters would be kind of like, you know, the WoW trading card game, where your character is your character, and then you kind of gear up and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So you'd have collectible trading card packs where the starting box would come with sort of a starter deck that would sort of see you along on your first games. But then if you wanted to kind of branch out and explore other opportunities, there would be, you know, the booster packs you could get that would have different items, different abilities, different monsters, things like that. You know, basically all the things that get people to spend money that they otherwise wouldn't spend. So
yeah, it does sound like a fun game.
Yeah, actually, it kind of does. Well, we actually haven't talked to you about the whole tabletop miniature wargaming. What brought you to that? What, you know, what kind of got you started into playing that, and where are you at now?
My brother actually kind of got me started into it. He worked at Games Workshop for I think 2 or 3 years as a you know, on the floor salesperson, one of the red shirts, I guess they're called. I'd always wanted to kind of get into Warhammer, but never really had the time or sort of knew where to do it. And then when I came back from college 1 year, he had all this stuff. I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool. You know, I'd like to start getting into that. So I started playing Warhammer. Played that for about 6 or 7 years, and then was getting a little tired of it. And then he told me about this game called War Machine that came out, which was similar but a bit more fast-paced. And so I tried a game of War Machine. I was like, this game is amazing. I want to play this now. And so, yeah, I've been collecting a War Machine army. I play Krix. Actually, just played in my first tournament last weekend down in San Diego. I think it was Kingdom Con. I came in, I want to say, 7th or 8th. If I hadn't flubbed my last game, I would have come in 3rd. So I was kind of peeved about that. It was a soft core tournament, which meant they were using hardcore rules, so 7-minute time turns, but your army didn't have to be fully painted, so that way more people could play. The 5th game of the day on 7-minute time turns is your brain just starts to go numb after a while.
Yeah,
it's
definitely.
It's a freaking grind. But yeah, it was a lot of fun, so I'm definitely looking forward to doing more. And then depending on how the CBA goes, I may actually go to a convention in Seattle and play in the tournament there.
I was going to say, you're kind of up in that area of the home front of War Machine, since they're based out of Seattle. You're closer than we are, actually.
Yeah. Well, and that's actually one of the things, too, that one of my friends, or my brother's friends who wants to start the store, is that there's no real War Machine gaming store in Southern California where people can just kind of show up and play, which is crazy since there's such a huge market here. So, I mean, I think it could work out pretty well if we can get it set up properly.
See, I hear you say that, and it blows me away that so Southern California, there's no gaming shops, there's no comic shops, there's no places where people can go and play.
Right. Well, they have like comic shops, stuff like that, but none of them has like playing area. Yeah. You know, like 7 or 8 tables, a good clean atmosphere. You know, none of them have it. They just have merchandise. And so I'm sure you guys know that if it's with people you trust and you've known for a while, it's cool to go over to someone's garage and play there. But if you just want to get a casual game in, it's kind of weird to talk to someone and be like, hey, let's meet at your place. I don't even know you.
Right, so. I as well am really surprised by that. I would think that certainly there that they would have more. But I guess maybe they're just, like you say, maybe they're just more concerned with more product per square foot. Let's get it out and make money.
Yeah, St. Louis is different because we've got, I can think of like at least 5 gaming shops off the top of my head that have a substantial amount of area to play that hold War Machine and 40K tournaments and do all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, and there's a bunch of shops in Minnesota that are the same too, which is why when my brother's friend was telling me about it, I was really, you know, kind of shocked almost in the fact that this is probably one of the ideal places to live in Southern California. You know, there's tons of people here, and I guess Privateer Press moves a lot of product in this area, but there's nowhere to actually play a game. And so he's actually been in contact with Matt Wilson, the head of Privateer Press, who really kind of wants to get a store down here. So hopefully we're going to see if we can make it happen.
I had my stint in War Machine myself, so and I'm sort of familiar with what you're talking about. I have to think that they would be very interested in getting a store like that there where they have play space, because that's one of their big tenants is, you know, having the demo, the box sets and playing a demo game and having space for people to actually play.
Yeah, well, and that's how you get new players into the game is by playing a game. Like, you show them this game where these giant, you know, steam mechs are running around smashing each other up, and everyone's like, oh my God, this is amazing. Where do I play this?
Yeah.
And then if you have a place for them to play, then they're going to be like, okay, I'm going to pick up a battle box, go home and assemble it, and then I'm going to come back and play.
Right. So, I mean, generally speaking, stores like that where you have a place to play, well, I mean, that's where you're going to play tournaments, you know, on the local scene, and those people that are going to come in and play tournaments are going to buy stuff. So it's usually a fairly win-win situation.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and then the other thing is that, like, the GW Battle Bunker for LA, that's actually where my brother worked. I mean, it's literally like 10 minutes away from where I live. You know, that's kind of what you want. It's just this huge open space with like 12 or 13 gaming tables, and then the front section is set up to sell all the GW stuff. I mean, it's perfect for kind of what we're going for. So probably try and model it off that for a little bit.
Probably the most interesting, largest games shop that we have around here is actually in Springfield, Missouri. It's a store that actually, they bought an old grocery store building, and they literally, they turned the whole thing into a game store. So they've got all this area. It's not one of your bigger ones. It was a smaller grocery store, but still, it's sizable space. So they've got all this area, this open gaming area in the back. But not only that, they've got LAN rooms. They've got tables for tabletop Magic or War Machine or Warhammer. And they've got tables for just, you know, RPGs as well. So I think that that's a great way to have a store that you can have all this space and have all different kinds of things you can do, including like the, you know, electronic, you know, for video games and land stuff and stuff like that too.
I just don't think that stores like that can survive being specialized anymore. I don't think that you can have just a comic book shop that only sells comics and nothing else, or only sells role-playing games and nothing else. Or if you do, you're only going to have like a couple of them per city, because, you know, there's only so many people that can support. If I were to do something like that, I'd try and be as diversified as possible. And I think you're seeing that. I think you're seeing more and more of these shops that are covering everything. They're covering video games and role-playing games.
The problem is with a lot of the diversified shops, though, is particularly if they get into video games, because they're not specialized in it, they don't have the same selection to compete.
Yeah.
Mostly when you see video games included in with a game shop, it's kind of a half-hearted attempt. I don't know that it adds anything to the shop. The best mergers that I've seen have been the board game, role-playing game, and comic shops. Those work very well together.
See, I think that's where they can get a lot of traction, is especially now with board games, because they become so intricate and detailed and just varied in the topics and the type of games that they have. There's a lot of fun things to play out there, and running demos and game nights with that really, it goes a long way to bringing people in.
Yeah, that store I go to pretty frequently in Minnesota, it's Tower Games. It's in southern Minneapolis. It's basically, that's exactly what the shop is. It's board games, tabletop games, role-playing games, stuff like that. They have like four tables set up to play on, and then kind of a basement with a couple more tables. But yeah, they'll have like a D&D night on like Thursday nights, War Machine on Friday nights. They'll have like Warhammer on Wednesdays, and then tournaments on the weekend, stuff like that. And they get a really good flow of people through there. So I think that's definitely the way to go with the business model.
And they also were Tower Comics too, weren't they?
Yeah, I think they were.
I used to work for Windmill Hobbies, which was a hobby distributor back in the late 80s, early 90s. And they were one of, they weren't one of my customers or my clients, but one of the other sales guys in the shop, they dealt with them.
Yeah,
it was your small world of the day.
Yeah, small, the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon.
Yeah, no kidding. 6 degrees of gaming bacon.
Yeah.
One other thing I want to ask you, Chris, because part of the reason why we're even talking to you in the first place is because you and I are contributing authors to this project being put on by Four Winds Fantasy Gaming. And I guess I want to ask you, you know, what brought you into deciding to contribute? Because it really has, if I'm right, the book has a lot to do with game mastering and being an effective GM. And so what brought you into that project, and what brings you into writing in general?
Well, what brought me into the project in specific was the person in charge asked me over Twitter, and I was like, sounds cool. I think I'll give it a shot.
Oh, there you go.
So see, Twitter, it's more than for just 140 character messages of no import. But so he asked me if I would be interested in writing a piece, and I'd actually been writing a couple articles for Massive Online Gamer by Jason Beckett. I think he runs the magazine. It's a kind of like MMO magazine type deal. I think it comes out once every couple months. I've always enjoyed reading a lot, and I'd like to try writing at some point. And I was like, well, this seems like a pretty good start to do that. And I'd like to think I have a somewhat handy turn of phrase. I spent about 3 years trolling the WoW Realm forums and mastered the art of the insult quite well. So I tried not to put any of that into the article, but it definitely polished my writing skills. Because if you can make people laugh with a very clever insult, then it takes a little work. But I heard about it, and I decided, you know, hey, why not, you know, give it a shot.
Absolutely.
So, Chris, as a pundit, I mean, obviously, not to belittle your position at all. I mean, you're not.
Oh, like, feel free. Everyone else does.
I mean, you're not the quarterback or anything like that. Do you get in front of the media very often? Does the media, like, seek you out at all?
Generally, only when I've said something inflammatory on Twitter, usually about the NFL front office.
Or when you blow in a play or something?
Yeah. It's usually they only want to talk to me if it's something bad. So, yeah, in most cases, I'm not in front of the media. Although I think the local media in Minnesota has kind of realized that I give a fairly decent quote. So they'll come to me and you know, ask some interesting questions to try and pad the stories they're doing.
Well, I was going to say, just from what we've heard here, you seem very well spoken. So I could see that.
Are you the Viking bad boy of Twitter?
Actually, I am. I'm really surprised I didn't get fined by the league last year.
Really?
That's awesome.
Tweets that were pretty bad.
Well, nice. I have to ask, what did you say?
Basically called Roger Goodell in the front office a bunch of hypocrites, and then on their whole player safety stance with the fines they were leveling, because they came in and showed us this video where it was basically, if you're doing this hit on a quarterback or a receiver, it's an illegal hit, and then they showed the exact same hit on a punter, on a punt return. Guy gets freaking leveled. Oh, no flag. This is perfectly legal. They show they show Ray Lewis leveling a guy. Oh, it's Ray Lewis. It's perfectly legal.
Wow.
Yeah, so I
drew that's because they're afraid of Ray Lewis. That's why.
Exactly. It's, you know, if you're a named player, then they're not going to fine you for it. And so I drew a diagram basically calling them out on their hypocrisy, and I used some choice language. And
I know. I don't blame
you
there.
For you.
And how often, I read that you got hit. You didn't have one particularly bad hit, but in general, do you get much contact as a punter?
Generally not. And when I do, I pretty much get de-cleated. So it's, it's not very fun when it happens, but I've learned how to keep my head on a swivel. I've been hit pretty hard, I want to say 4 times in my NFL career. And yeah, thankfully I've been able to get up and walk away from each one, but it's one of those things where if it's a punt return and one of the punt return guys sees you and you're not looking, he is going to lick his chops and then do his best to make sure you die on the field.
Really? Because I was just about to ask, is there an attitude of you don't necessarily go after the punter, or is there? I guess you just answered that question to say if they've got the chance, they're going to try to take you out.
Well, it also depends. I mean, the majority of guys won't go for the cheap shot. Like, I've only been cheap shotted once, and the guy was pretty much a dumbass, and he got cut from the team the next day because it was like the third or fourth time he'd done it.
Wow.
So in most cases, what guys will do, like if they see you trying to actually tackle the returner or get into position, then they're going to take the hit because they're lining up a block. It's what they're supposed to do. And of course, they're going to relish it a bit because it's the punter or the kicker and you have no idea they're coming. So, you know, they're going to try a little extra hard. But in most cases, there's been a couple returns where there's been 3 guys between me and the returner. And I mean, I'm going to make an effort, but at the same time, you know, if you're not going balls out trying to dive at someone's knees, then they're not going to try and hurt you. So it's one of those things where, yeah, you're not going to get to the guy, you know, just make sure you survive to play the rest of the game.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, you have to do a lot of leg training, keep your strength up so you can, you know, continue to kick farther and all that. Can you crush walnuts with your thighs?
Actually,
wait a minute. Speak slowly when you answer this question.
It's funny you ask, because I do as little leg training as I can get away with. Because luckily for me, I'm very tall. So leverage-wise, I can get a lot of force on the ball just since I have long legs.
Can do physics.
Yeah, exactly. See, I know practical physics. I don't know engineering physics. It's all the impractical stuff like bridges. Hours and things like that. But anyways, I've always felt that just practicing punting and being flexible, that works the muscles you're going to need to use. And I've never really been a big weightlifting guy anyways. So, I mean, it's worked for me so far. So I figure, why fix it if it isn't broken?
It's not broken. Exactly. You know, we're a bit removed from it, but I had never heard of the video game company Neversoft, but that's got to be the best double entendre video game company name I've ever heard in my entire life.
Wow, you really had never heard of it, Chris?
I've never heard of Neversoft. I mean, I know what it's like to be Neversoft, but I've never heard of Neversoft.
No, they did the Tony Hawk series of games. That was actually their big claim to fame. And then Activision stuck them on Guitar Hero to try and ram as much money out of the franchise as they could before they killed it.
You have a really high opinion of Activision, I'm gathering.
Well, I mean, I like Activision. I like the guys I know in it. But I mean, anyone who's seen one of Bobby Kotick's quotes knows that he's not the most stellar human being when it comes to treating people the right way. Mm-hmm. And they do kind of have a reputation of running franchises into the ground. I mean, as a business strategy, obviously it's working for them because they have a crap ton of money. I mean, especially now that they've acquired Blizzard. But, you know, at the same time, you look at it as a gamer and you're kind of like, it's bad.
Right.
Yeah. See, because I remember them back in the Pitfall and River Raid days when they were pretty much the shit. as far as that, as far as video game design went. I mean, they were the company. I mean, because they were beating Atari's ass with designing games for Atari's own system, you know, way back. And they just, it was just everything that they did in regards to games was better than what anybody else was doing at the time. Yeah. And it's just funny to see how things change. I mean, obviously as a company that has changed completely just because of just how times have, you know, what happened to them. But
and it's really weird too, because it used to be that EA was, you know, the evil empire. Yeah. Like they were the company you didn't want to be, and Activision really kind of took that spot over, and EA has now become this company where, hey, we're putting out Dead Space, we're putting out all these great games that are coming out, and you know, we actually care about gamers again. I mean, yeah. it's weird. And so I hopefully think Activision gets back to that point sometime soon.
I wonder if with EA, I wonder if they kind of got slapped into shape with the whole outcry against like Secure ROM. And about their DRM strategies, how anti-customer it was.
Well, not just that. I think they also had that big unpaid intern scandal type thing, I think, where they were forcing people to do like mandatory overtime and not paying them. So I think that probably also helped backlash against them quite a bit.
Yeah. You know, maybe just the right people got asked to move on in the in the upper management. And maybe that kind of shook some things up, too.
Yeah, that could be it, too.
Mm-hmm. So what games are you playing right now?
Right now, I'm actually playing Portal 2. I put that on pause in order to do this interview.
We're very lucky to get Chad here tonight because of Portal 2.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a fantastic game. I am loving it.
I'm a huge Portal fan. I actually had it pre-ordered and pre-loaded, and then at 1 o'clock in the morning when it released, I had the countdown thing going on. I ran upstairs when it was off and started decrypting my game, and I stayed up till like 2:30 in the morning playing it.
Nice. Yeah, actually this might lose me some nerd cred, but the first time I played the original Portal was earlier today to get ready for Portal 2.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah. Huh. Like I'd heard about it, my friends had been recommending it to me, and I just never felt the urge to play it, and I'm really glad I did because I really enjoyed it. And now playing Portal 2, I'm like, oh, this is awesome.
Yeah, Portal is a really hard game to sell to someone until they've played it. I haven't known anyone that tried the demo and didn't immediately get the game and play it. But just describing it to people, it's hard to hook people just on the concept.
I always tell them just straight up, it's like, listen, I can't really describe it to you. It's the best 5 hours in video gaming.
Yeah, and the thing is like, the gameplay is good, but for me, it's not the gameplay that sells it. It's the dialogue and just the interaction.
Yes. Yes,
like that's what does it for me.
The implied storyline, it doesn't force feed you a story. It just presents it as you play the game. You just experience the story. I love Valve. I'm a huge Valve fanboy. I love all of their games. I'm a huge Half-Life fan. I'm a huge Portal fan.
Yeah, I think they've done a great job. And I mean, especially now with Portal 2, playing through that, I mean, you just look at this facility as you're going through it and you get this sense of how epically big it is. And I love that they're tying in Black Mesa with it, like Aperture Sciences competing against Black Mesa and things like that. Yeah. Like, oh, it's just great.
Yeah. I can't wait till Half-Life 2 Episode 3 comes out. There's a container ship and it's full of Aperture Science containers, and supposedly you're going to have a portal gun and such, but God, I've been waiting for that one for years. You play any Left 4 Dead or anything like that?
Played the first Left 4 Dead, never really got into Left 4 Dead 2. Mm.
Shame on you.
I know. Shame on me. It's, I don't know. Again, it was just one of those where my friends were telling me about it, but I wasn't feeling the first-person shooter mood for whatever reason. I was just kind of like, that.
Yeah.
So,
sort of along those lines, what games are coming out down the road that you're looking forward to? Anything?
I'm sure there's a bunch, but I couldn't really tell you off the top of my head. Basically, I kind of peruse like Joystick and Game Informer once a week or so, and you know, kind of get a sense of what's coming out. It's one of those things where generally my friend who works at Game Informer, like, he'll tell me, you know, if something really cool is on the horizon. And I know Mass Effect 3, that'll be one I'm definitely looking forward to.
Awesome. I am currently playing Mass Effect 2 right now. I'm one of those that I hate to play a game too quickly because I hate for the wait for the next one. So I didn't play Mass Effect 2 first came out. So I'm playing it now, and I'm going to have a long ways to wait.
I've just played the first Mass Effect.
Well, that's true, yeah. So I'm loving that game. That's great.
And I can't stand Mass Effect.
Yeah,
and whenever
Chad
we go
it.
Out, these guys are talking and talking about it.
You know, we'll talk about it, but at the same time, you and Dan, and you guys will talk about some games that I don't like either. So Well, it's a give and take.
That's because it's Dan and
yes,
it's
very so. It's very Chad centric. I understand.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I love Mass Effect. I kind of see what people say about like the shooting aspect of it in terms of the combat, how that can kind of throw some people off. But for me, I love the storyline, and I think BioWare just does a great job with pretty much every game they bring out.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, have you played Dragon Age?
I have. I played the first one. I haven't played the second one, and after reading some of the reviews on it, I don't know if I'm going to.
Oh, really?
Because I see a lot of people are talking about the copy-pasting they did with the environment, and the one thing I can't stand is just kind of laziness, whether it's due to rushing a
which is ironic coming from someone who's admitted they're lazy.
Yeah, no, it's like I'm very lazy, but I just, if I see it in a video game, like I'm okay with reusing textures and stuff like that, but if you make it super obvious where a ton of people are commenting on it,
I can see that.
That's not cool.
I haven't played the Dragon Age yet, but the one thing that I do like about Dragon Age 2 is the fact that it's like the Mass Effect games and the fact that your character actually speaks. Instead of the main character doesn't speak, but everybody else does, you have to read your dialogue. I've been so spoiled on that now with Mass Effect, I don't want to play games that don't do that. Like, I was a huge Knights of the Old Republic fan, but that's a great example of a game where your main character never says a line. You have to read everything that he says, or he or she, whatever. And that it's just like, oh, I'm so spoiled now that my character actually says something.
Yeah, it's one of those things where if you're going to do the silent protagonist, you pretty much have to do it the right way, kind of either Half-Life or in almost a funny way like Chrono Trigger. Otherwise, you know, it doesn't come off right. Like you lose that sense of immersion. I'd rather have a character I can identify with and I know that's the character, even if I'm the one playing him, than, you know, just kind of this mute guy that just walks around.
I don't know. It doesn't bother me. I can go both ways. I mean, I've been playing video games since I was a kid, and you know, you mentioned Chrono Trigger. I love Chrono Trigger.
One of my top games of all time.
Yes, it is. It is in definitely my top five games. And, you know, it has a silent protagonist in. It is absolutely fine. Grandia 1 had I'm pretty sure that has speaking protagonist. Another great game. It's just something that I grew up with. So, you know, they didn't.
I'm not used to the talking protagonist. I mean, Fallout 3 is one of my top five games of all time, and it has a silent protagonist.
Yeah. Well, like I said, for me, I never experienced it until Mass Effect. I've played these other games, Fallout, Knights of the Old Republic, and these other things. It's the silent character, and that's what I was completely used to. I love them. The games are fantastic. It's just that I realize now, oh my God, that could have been so much more awesome. It just would have had more awesome.
I don't know. I'm just used to old Nintendo and Super Nintendo role-playing games where the voice dialogue was...
Well, but I have you played... Well, yeah, you did. You said you played some where they actually were speaking. I was going to say, because I know you haven't played Mass Effect, but that, for me, like I said, that was my big one that I was exposed to it. But yeah, anyway.
Well, I think the thing is that now that we've seen that, you know, you can do a talking protagonist and have it done well, then there's not really a lot of reason, you know, not to do it unless you can't do it well. Because, you know, if you don't do it well, then it's just distracting. But, you know, done well, I think it does add something to the game.
I think that games that have, at least right now, games have large amount of dialogue to them. That kind of limits it. Like a Fallout 3, huge amounts of dialogue, tons of dialogue trees, many, many different ways down dialogue tree and get all these different responses. I think the sheer volume of text that you would have to put in there would just, it would probably just overwhelm the game's budget hiring that much voice acting for it.
Yeah, that'd probably be pretty tough.
But I think one day we'll get there.
All right. Well, I think that pretty much wraps up what we had to talk about this evening. So,
and I want to go home and play Portal 2.
Yes, Chad wants to play Portal. And Chris as well wants to get back to Portal 2. And unfortunately, he's going to unpause. He's going to be right back to it.
I know.
Much quicker than you. But, well, I just want to thank Chris Cluey again for coming on and talking with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
And I was going to say, if you, like you mentioned before, if your card game ever goes anywhere, we'd love to have you back on to talk about it. You know, if you, you know, get it published or get to that point, we'd, you know, come on and talk about it.
Cool. Thanks. Yeah, I will definitely take you up on that as soon as I stop being lazy and actually finish the big test.
I understand, man.
That's the hardest part.
That's true.
Okay.
That's going to wrap it up for us. We'll talk to you next time.
See you. Sounds good.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2011. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com.